You seem to have a pretty good knowledge of what's at stake here. You know, you haven't read the Act. Nobody but lawyers reads those things. But you've got a pretty good idea what's at risk. And that's important. But let me encourage you, however, to phone Tananaw chiefs and ask them to come down and hold a meeting or a workshop. But I hope this meeting has helped you to understand what we're talking about, because it certainly helped me.
A few people asked you some questions and you said you'd refer to it later. When would that be?
Well, they asked me some questions that are pretty difficult, and I said that I'd try to deal with them in my report, but they're not questions I can just give you answers to like that tonight. You know, those answers wouldn't be worth very much if... you've asked some tough questions. Nobody knows all the answers to this thing. That's why I'm going around the state. Maybe I'll know some of the answers that are important to you next year. Good.
I know a lot of our, I'm Alberta Vent from Whistler, a lot of our old people are just as good as educated college attorneys or lawyers if they could be in our native tongue. But in English, they're lost. And in a lot of ways, we need help. Well, most of our kids should be educated to try to help us out in the future. But it costs so much to get educated. I have two kids that I sent to college. They went first semester. It cost them $3,000 each to go to college for just half a year. We can't afford that. But in a lot of ways, our native people are educated, especially about our land, so much that I think a lot of them are even smarter than the people that come up. Because they come here with all kinds of questionnaires. We answer all their questions, so they learn from us about our land. But there are so many ways that we need help. Like, for instance, I have one question. We're on wildlife refuge. Huslia is our corporate land. And I'm wondering if we have better chance to try to keep our land as being on wildlife refuge.
Well, one of the regional corporations, NANA, has worked out arrangements with the federal authorities for people to engage in subsistence in the wildlife refuges. Mm-hmm. And they think it's good to have those refuges because that really means that the amount of land available for subsistence is that much greater. Mm-hmm. But it depends on how well you can work things out with the federal people in your own area. And a couple of people who've already testified today said they were on the advisory board, and so they're no doubt trying to work that out on your behalf.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I want to bring up is I'm sure in favor of our kids being born after 1971 to take part in this land claims, because as about 40 or 50 years from now, those native kids wouldn't be claimed as Alaskan natives. I don't know what they would be called. And at that time, we'll have nothing, because all of us here today will be all underground. And the kids that are not even in land claims will be alive.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point.
So I sure wish they would be included even though they were born after 1971. And another question I have is there a way we can make ruling or whatever to see if we can distribute the land to the people, individual, even the ones that are born today, well, so it wouldn't have to be taxed?
Well, that's a good question. Let me put it this way. Under state law, it's very hard, if not impossible, for the corporations to distribute land to the children born after 1971. And as far as the shareholders are concerned, the only corporations that have distributed land to shareholders have done it by distributing land to all the shareholders, and then they choose, they have a lottery to choose who gets to pick what land. And they can distribute 1.5 acre home sites to the shareholders, but it is very difficult to do because and only a couple of corporations, I think, have done it. They allowed the shareholders to take it, they had a lottery, you know, and if your name came out first, you got to choose the first 1.5 acre plot, and so on and so forth, mm-hmm. till the person at the end of the line got the last pick. But if you got that, it would still be subject to tax after 1991. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be like a native allotment. That's what I'm saying.
There's no way we can make it so that it would be something like native allotment.
No, I don't think you could convert it into a native allotment. Mm-hmm.
Seem like, from what I understand, that every way we turn, we're running into a dead end.
Well, that's true. It's mm-hmm. like it's as Mr. Dementiev said. Mm-hmm. Every time you answer a question, mm-hmm. Every time you find an answer to a question, you seem to have 100 more questions mm-hmm. instead of an answer. And this thing is like a gigantic puzzle. It seems to work that way. So that's why we are here, to find what help you can give us and to see what's really on your mind, what's mm-hmm. really important. And let's see if we can tackle the things that are really important.
Yeah, like as business corporation, business profit-making corporation, we're trying to save money. Are trying to make money to buy our land back after 1991 if our shareholders wanted to sell, which we don't want them to do. And then at the same time, Uncle Sam is taking 38% off our retained earnings, if we had any earnings at all. So at the same time we're trying to make money, he's chewing at our back end to get his share.
Okay.
So it seemed like we can never get off. No.
Well, look. When we talk about taxes, mm-hmm. If you've got a profit-making corporation, you're going to have to pay corporate income tax. Mm-hmm. There's just no question about that. Mm-hmm. And you might as well save your breath before you go asking Congress to exempt your corporation from federal income tax. But native ancestral lands throughout the lower 48 and Canada mm-hmm. are not liable to pay tax on the property. They don't have to pay property taxes. Well, that's the argument that it seems to me you have to be able to make after 1991. You have to say, look, this is native ancestral land. It isn't taxed in the lower 48. It shouldn't be taxed in Alaska. I mean, that's the case, it seems to me, you can make. But a profit corporation, it seems to me, is always going to have to pay federal income tax.
Okay, that's all the questions. Thanks.
My name is Dorothy Atlin, and I'm a board of directors for our corporation, Koidlotsina. And we have 492 shareholders. And about a week ago, I did a survey on kids that are not enrolled in our corporation, and it was approximately 140 for our four villages. And that's in the past 13 years. And another, 13 years, it could double, you know, and that, I just hope that we could think of a way, you know, to include them.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Thanks. Thank you for those figures.
My name is Kenny Sam again, and I was wondering if we could put all our, something like an IRA, you know, put all our corporation land in an IRA trust, you know, our Native Council hold it in trust for the people, for all our corporations, on, you know, like in Kayak River here, and separate that. That's the only way we can hold our land that I know of, for separate the business in from the land business. I mean, IRA been with us since 1936, and we finally started to use it, and then they find out that there was too much power for the natives in there in certain way that we didn't even know a lot of language was in there, like holding trust of our land and trust, untaxable. I was wondering if you can have a IRA council and have them hold it and then separate it from altogether from the corporation.
Well, that's one of the ideas that is coming up.
Have all of our, like, we got all our four villages here. We can have each council in each village. The Native Council, Tradition Council, hold the land in trust for all the future children that come out of this area. Instead of cutting them off at a certain date, and because the way it's going, there's going to be no more Athabascans in another 10, 20 years, the way it's operating.
And well, that's something I'm going to have to consider. Yeah. Is using the IRAs.
The land bank is pretty, it's a good idea, but then if they only give you 5 years, then you have another guy out there in the land bank saying that we're going to change this policy because we've got too many guys in the cities against it and stuff like that, then we'll start taxing you. Kind of, you're holding uranium in your land, and we want some of that, and they're going to jack the tax up, and then... there's got to be some way where we can separate that, because the way it is, we're going down slowly.
Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Gladys Durandoff. I just have a question for you. What do you think we should, what's your opinion on what we should do with our land, put in land bank, IRA, or what? Maybe you should explain IRA first.
Well, IRA is means an Indian Reorganization Act council, and the IRA councils are tribal councils established under federal law, and they are empowered to hold land, but the land is held in trust by the Secretary of the Interior, and it is under IRA councils or traditional councils that most native land is held in the United States in the lower 48. And so there the land is not taxable and it can't be the subject of corporate takeovers and so on. But I will, when I write my report and give it to you next summer, I'll make my recommendation about which one of these might be the best, corporation, IRA, or something else, land bank, or I don't know what. But you let me think about it. Let me hear from people in other villages, and then I'll make up my mind.
I just have one more question. What are some of the disadvantages of IRA? I can't remember.
Well, some of the people say that the IRAs are under the direction of the federal government, so that if your land was held in trust under the IRA, you wouldn't be able to deal with it. Now, you could use it for subsistence, but if you wanted to sell some of it or develop it, you might you'd have to go to the Secretary for permission, Secretary of the Interior. So that's a problem, some people think, and that's why they've said, well, let's not put it in trust with the Secretary of the Interior. Let's see if there's some other kind of trust that is not taxable. So it's there are good points and bad points on each of these.
What about land bank? What's some of the disadvantage of that?
Well, the land bank would keep the land for subsistence, but it would still be land that could be taken over by outsiders in 1991. If they took over the corporation, they'd get all the land, including the land in the land bank. The advantage of the land bank is this, that the land can't be taxed after 1991, but it is still corporation land, and if the corporation were taken over, the land in the land bank would be taken over too.
Do you have any idea or estimation of the people that might be able to sell their land? Because we, like the people that live in city, they have lots and they don't have no reason to hold their land. Would you have any idea? Because we tried to do a survey on...
Would I have any idea of what?
Any idea on how many people is going to be selling their allotments? I mean, you probably considered that.
You mean selling their shares or selling...
I mean, selling their shares.
Oh, I don't know. There isn't anybody in this room who says they would sell their shares.
I know, but there's a lot of other people that has shares that's not in this room. There's a lot of people that lives down the cities and stuff. I know some of my friends that live down there, and they... I know for a fact that they don't even live here. They don't need that lot, and, you know, and they live in the city. They need the money.
Well, when we were in Fairbanks holding hearings, we had native people in Fairbanks who said, sure, I'll sell my shares. I'm going to need the money. So it's the shareholders who are out of town, who live in the cities, that are most likely to sell their shares. I think that's true.
Okay, thank you.
What happened to the good weather? Well, we'll just wait. With it raining, nobody's going anywhere, I guess.
Well, I guess we can keep you busy all night.
Right.
I'd like to find out how does white guys paying for the tax on the land that he don't even own? No, my brother owned his land.
I don't know. I really can't answer that. I don't know enough about it.
They're picking up firefighters, so I'm going to look around for my crew boss. But I'd like to thank you for bringing up this meeting, and thank everybody for putting up the cover dish for your people, and I'd like to thank everybody for participating and talking to everybody. This is the first time I ever did this for a long time, so I'd like to thank everybody for talking and putting their heads together, and everybody, sooner or later, everybody will understand what we're talking about and what we're really fighting for. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we were talking about the land a little earlier, and I'd like to say that I don't think the land should be held in trust by the Secretary of Interior, and I think it should also be separated from the corporations. I think it was said earlier by Claude that it should be managed and owned and overseen by native people, local native people. I think the federal government and has shown in the past that it's not really sensitive to native people. The federal government is not really sensitive on the local level to native people, and I don't think by putting the federal government in charge of native lands would be a good thing. I think it should be managed by natives. I think natives can manage the land. I think native people are qualified to manage the land, and they should be able to manage it themselves without having the federal government step in and say you can't do this, or this is what you've got to do. This is what has been done in the past. I think if it was managed by native people from the local level, it'd be managed a lot better. I think it'd be better all around. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Lorraine Beatis from Hughes. In regards to what Wayne said, I think it is true that it should be managed by the native people, but we need more time than 7 years to do it. I think it would work out if we went from the inside out instead of the outside in, with the government coming in to us, if we got together and put something together that we thought would work after meetings and everything and presented it to the government, hopefully they would accept it as we presented it. But they never gave us a chance to present anything good. You know, we didn't have enough time, and everybody is just now getting into the issue, and 7 years is not enough time to put this whole thing together. I think it should be extended.
Thank you.
My name is Gladys Rudnoff. Referring to Lorraine's statement, is there any possible way that we could extend this so we could educate more people on land claims?
Well, one of the things you can ask Congress to do is to extend the deadline, 1991, extend it farther, maybe to the year 2001. You can ask them to do that, but you should remember that in the meantime, you haven't solved the problem of what happens if there's a corporate bankruptcy. You know, you could lose the land that way. You haven't solved the problem of the children born since 1971. By the year 2001, there'll be a majority of Native people in Alaska. You still haven't solved that problem. So just asking for a postponement of 1991 for 10 years, let's say, means that your problems are probably going to be even tougher to solve in 2001 than they will be in 1991. But that's an option, asking for a postponement.
Another question is, how come they didn't give allotments to everybody that was born then when the land claims started?
Well, they started Native allotments in 1906, and they said if you apply for 160 acres and can show that you've been living there or living off it, then you can do it. But for many, many years, Alaska Natives didn't apply because there was nobody using the land but themselves. Mm-hmm. So they didn't think they had to file an application to use land that had been given to them by their forefathers. And it was only in the 1950s and 1960s that they started applying. And some of those applications that were made way back in the 1960s have never been completely processed yet.
Well, when the land claim started, there was a lot of people, a lot of young people, you know, that weren't of age to get land. How come they just didn't give the allotments to them like they did with shares?
I'm sorry, would you repeat that?
There was, I don't have any, I don't have allotment.
Yeah.
How come I wasn't eligible for it? I was, you know, I was here. How come they didn't give it out like they did with shares?
Oh, because everybody who was alive in 1971, born before December 18th, 1971, received shares in the corporations. But they decided to end allotments, and they said no more allotments unless you've already applied. And you hadn't applied.
Well, they said we couldn't. They said we were too young.
All right. Well, then they got you both ways. Before the deadline, you were too young to apply. Afterward, nobody could apply anyway. I mean, that's the way they did it.
I mean, how come they just didn't, you know, give allotments out to people that was born already, who were here
well,
on...
they didn't. You know, Congress is a lot of people, a lot of senators and representatives, and they do these things, and they are your government, and that's what they did. And I can't analyze all the reasons they may have had in mind.
Well, I was thinking about that a long time. I just wanted to ask. Thank you.
Do you have kind of a general idea of what you're going to present to Congress in a few years?
No, it's next year. It's not a few years, it's next year.
Next year.
And I'm not presenting it to Congress, I'm presenting it to you. And then you decide whether you're going to go to Congress with it. And if you want me to come along to Congress, I'll come too. Well, I've got an idea that I have to deal with the issues you've raised. I don't mean you, I mean all these people here. And sure, I'm going to have to discuss these questions and make recommendations about them. But I want to keep an open mind till I've been all over Alaska and heard from people in every region. So you just give me a few more months. Well, I think then I should thank you all for the evidence you've given. It has been one of the best meetings we've had anywhere in Alaska, and I just want to say that my wife and Jim and I have really enjoyed coming here to Huzlia. It was Claude Dementiev who insisted that the commission should come here to Huzlia, and I'm sure glad he insisted, because it's a very nice place, and it was really nice to meet all of you, and you, your evidence has really been a big help to me, and I do appreciate it. I repeat the promise I made earlier that I'll send a copy of my report next summer to everybody who testified. And I will be dealing with these questions that we've been discussing all day. It's been a good discussion, and I've learned a lot. I think I'm leaving Huzlia wiser than I was when I came, and maybe I should get out of town while I'm still ahead. So I just want to thank you again for supper, and say how much I enjoyed meeting all of you. I think the discussion's been a good one. All the major themes have been struck. A lot of good questions have been asked. And you've made it clear to me how you feel about the land and subsistence, about your children, and about the future of Huzlia and the other villages from which you have come. And I want especially to thank the people who came from out of town. I'm glad you came to the meeting. I want to thank our hosts here in Huzlia, and the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Lot of cables. Oh yeah, I got a lot of cables. I love it for there.